Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin is home to the nation's only Master Cheesemakers program that provides innovative cheesemakers with continuing education opportunities? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. This is Katie, HRN Executive Director, and I'm so excited to share with you our coverage from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival.
We are here live today at Charleston Wine and Food.
Join us as we talk all things food.
Come to Charleston, eat some seafood. Eat all of the seafood.
Chicken fried chicken with chorizo steak and salsa verde mashed potatoes.
So quintessentially like Southern fare at its finest.
And have important conversations.
We're also talking about professional women in restaurants and how underrepresented they are, people of color in restaurants, and how they're not talked about.
We get real with Food Network's Manit Chauhan.
Balance is BS. I was told that I wasn't going to be bleeped out.
And find out about raising sugarcane with Chef Sean Brock.
It's like being Indiana Jones or something. You never know what you're going to find.
You'll come away inspired by the power of food and the food scene in Charleston. Here's Dr. Jessica B. Harris.
Food is constantly in flux. Food is always moving. Food is the only real lingua franca that we have that allows us to connect with other folks.
So tune in to Heritage Radio Network on tour at heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't go wrong.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. My author today is Hannah Howard, whose new book, Feast, is just coming out. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi, Diane. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So your subtitle is True Love in and Out of the Kitchen. Was that your first choice?
Yes, I really liked the ring of it.
Uh-huh.
And I think that love is at the heart of the book.
Uh-huh.
The book is a memoir about my working my way through restaurants and falling in love with food,
mm-hmm.
including cheese,
uh-huh.
and struggling with and recovering from an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I looked for that love with food. Sometimes I looked for that love with men. So I think it's a search for finding that love from a place that actually works and feeds me in a way physically and, you know.
And mentally.
Mentally,
okay.
Emotionally,
okay.
Spiritually.
I thought perhaps the publisher came up with that subtitle.
Nope. My publisher is Little A.
Uh-huh.
They're the literary imprint of Amazon Publishing.
Okay.
And they've been really wonderful in letting me make decisions that matter about the book.
Okay.
I got to have a lot of input into the cover, into
mm-hmm.
the design,
mm-hmm.
and from talking with some other authors, I know that's not always the case.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So I feel very lucky.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so usually I get the book sooner. Or I've even read it already before I arranged the interview. But for this time, it came quite late. And as I started to read it, I realized, yikes, this is not your typical food memoir or food book. So it's heartfelt, personal story of a young woman struggling with an eating disorder in the midst of the food world. Wow.
Yeah. While pitching the book,
yeah.
we had a few people say, oh, the eating disorder angle is interesting, and the insider restaurant and grocery store at the end of the book angle is interesting, but we don't think they belong together.
Mm-hmm.
And That has not been my experience.
Uh-huh.
I mean, obviously.
Well, it was your life.
It was my life. But I think that it makes so much sense that people, I mean, of course, I would never say that everyone who works in food has an eating disorder, because that would be absurd.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it makes a certain sense, like, that there might be more alcoholics or people who struggle with alcohol who work in, behind bars mm-hmm. or in that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And just like that, I think that people are sometimes drawn to things that are complicated and difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to master my demons in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And part of recovery has been untangling the good, healthy stuff that makes me love food and
right.
still want to work in food today from the obsessive, unhealthy, unhappy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, you are so brave, though, to reveal all this.
Well, I hope it's brave and not stupid. But, you know, it's been...
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. But I wrote an essay sort of coming out with this issue
mm-hmm.
maybe about a year ago, and I was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that maybe my food colleagues would respect me less, but just hearing the response of so many people who related...
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, there was a weight lifted off my shoulders. And I mean, really, if people resonate, I feel like I've done my job.
Mm-hmm. Now, how and when did you decide to write this, to be so honest, to come out of the eating disorder closet mm-hmm. where you were for so long?
Yeah. Yeah. I still sometimes think, wow, it's crazy that I've done this thing.
Yeah. Because you're busy hiding it.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the book.
Right. And I mean, for most of my life, it really was my deepest, darkest secret. And it was something that carried so much shame. And I think part of the reason I wanted to write about it was even talking about it with mm-hmm. people was such a release of that shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that people were lightning was going to strike me from above, or people were going to look at me with some sort of disgust. But it was really the opposite that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt so cool and so freeing and empowering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've always loved to write, and I've always written personal essays and stories about my life. And, at some point, I kind of felt like these little essays and anecdotes were all adding up to something bigger,
mm-hmm.
and Feast was born.
Okay. Now, so did you pitch it, or did they find you?
I pitched it.
Uh-huh.
I've had, the story of how I found my agent was that I had been working at a website that doesn't exist anymore called New York Natives.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with a man, Thomas Picel, who's a great friend. And he wrote a book about lucid dreaming, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just quizzed him on every part of the process of his book, because mm-hmm. I always have known that I've wanted to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And he introduced me to his agent, and I sent her kind of the idea for this book and a few essays I had written, and she said, "Can you send me more?" And I was like,
"That's always a good sign."
Right. But I was like, "How much more?" And she's like, "Send me everything you have." So it was kind of terrifying. And mm-hmm. I sent her everything I had, and we had lunch, and she loved the idea. She signed me. She helped me write a proposal.
Oh, great.
We pitched that proposal and got so many rejections.
Oh, no.
Some of them were like the loveliest rejections.
Oh, okay. Nice rejections.
But they were still, we love this, we love this, uh-huh. but no. So it was still
Or it's
hard.
Not for us.
Right. Of course. And people, there's a million reasons like, oh, we've already published a food memoir in the last year, which for me is like, well,
that's silly.
So who cares, right? people.
This is a different one.
Yeah. And then finally we got a yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the book describes Hannah's path through college, starting at Columbia, through many food jobs, including cheese jobs, through some serious relationships, through some crazy weight loss and serious binging periods, but mostly the focus is on the eating disorder part of your life, I feel, which was a secret for most of when the book takes place.
Mm-hmm.
So was that an incredible leap?
You mean to write about it?
Yes.
Yes.
Had you written about it secretly already, or are you going back to remember freshman year as you're writing the freshman year part?
I did a lot of going back and remembering things. Mm-hmm. And I thought when I was writing it that, you know, I've been in recovery for now it's almost 7 years, mm-hmm. but the writing process has been long. So let's say it was 4 or 5 years. And as I started to write, I felt like, oh, I'm in a really good, healthy place. It's going to be fine. But dropping myself back in the middle of the really hard,
right,
shitty, it was, yeah, not, it was not easy.
Yeah.
I started seeing a therapist again, which I'm really glad that, mm-hmm, I did. And I think now that it's in the world, I feel some sort of catharsis. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was just really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. That's what I figured. Now, when do you start Columbia as a freshman? What year?
2005.
Okay, so a while ago.
Yes,
we're talking. And getting your old. First job, your first cheese job, was at Picheline.
Yes.
Well, and when was that?
So freshman that was year? Freshman year.
Okay.
It wasn't as much of a cheese job as I wanted it to be,
right?
Because I was a host, but at Picheline, which doesn't exist anymore, mm-hmm, they had the most incredible cheese program and a cheese cart. And
we all know it.
We all know it. I'm really, like, I didn't know quite what I was stumbling into, and mm-hmm, I just fell in love.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love at first sight and smell.
I love your cheese quote from the book about falling in love with cheese. It's going to be on the website.
Great.
So anyway, and then when did Casa Lula start?
So I have the distinction. I actually just on Saturday had a small gathering of friends and family to celebrate the book at Casa Lula, which felt very full circle.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I love that place. And I had the distinction of being the first non-friend employee to be hired. So I was actually hired before it was opened. Mm-hmm. It opened in 2007, mm-hmm, I believe. Yes.
Okay.
So it was my junior year, and I got so lucky that I got to be part of such an amazing place. I didn't quite know how I was.
Yeah. And to be at both Picheline, which is sort of like the high-flung, mm-hmm, place for cheese, and then to be at Casa Lula, which is much more friendly but also excellent cheese.
Right. The cheese was definitely the connecting thread, for sure.
Yeah, that would be a great experience to be at both those places.
It was. I was having my Columbia education, but I was also really getting an excellent cheese education.
Right, and food education.
And food
with
education.
All the things that you did.
Yes.
Now I've got to come clean myself. Some listeners may know, but many do not. I am actually a clinical psychologist. That's my day job. So, that was the engineer's reaction. But I thought he knew. Anyway, I have a private practice in Port Washington and Brooklyn. But right away, as I'm reading your book, I am yelling at the book saying, tell your therapist. Why doesn't she know? Where are your parents? What about these boyfriends? How can you trick so many people?
I think, well, I don't know if I was tricking them.
Okay.
As so
but
much
you
as
lost a lot of weight freshman year.
I did. But then people were concerned.
Yeah.
And I do think that there's a really big problem with our eating disorder treatment world,
uh-huh,
that when I gained back that weight pretty quickly,
yeah,
everyone thought, oh, she's better now because I looked normal.
Okay.
But I wasn't.
Right. Right.
And so nobody really seemed concerned after that very brief period in my life, mm-hmm, where I was underweight.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe I was really good at hiding it because I was so ashamed, and mm-hmm, I'm sort of like, you know, I went to Columbia. I feel like I'm good at jumping through the hoops of, mm-hmm, achievement, mm-hmm, and doing what people expect.
And you are working practically full time while you're at Columbia at food jobs.
Yeah, I don't know how I did it. But it was such a good balance because the food jobs were so they were very social. I was talking to people all the time. Mm-hmm. I was with the food, which is very different than writing a bunch of papers and being in the library and being in class. So I feel like they were kind of nice foils for each other in that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now it's time for our break. So this is Diane Stemple talking to Hannah Howard about her book Feast, and we'll be right back.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the Farmstead Cheese Company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious stinky Limburger and its long storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Sartori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth-generation cheesemakers combine old-world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
Hi, Diane Stemple back with Hannah Howard talking about her memoir Feast, which is all about food, college, boyfriends, and eating disorders. I noticed that you don't give any weights in the book.
Yes. I actually have learned in the eating disorder recovery world that weights and numbers can be really triggering.
Okay.
And they certainly have been for me in the past. Mm-hmm. And it also seems sort of beside the point.
Okay. I mean, yes. I think at one point you admit to having lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
But that was the only number in the whole book.
Did you, as a reader, were you wondering?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, not as a psychologist. Uh-huh. I was like as a nosy reader, you know, and wondering if I should get an eating disorder, if I ever had an eating disorder, like, you know, just wanting to compare myself.
Right. I think that's one of the reasons I didn't want to put it in, because I do feel like there's a sort of disordered way of looking at it, like, oh, that's
is that
skinny or whatever, and
because I'm sure you were skinny and you didn't think you were skinny.
Well, then that's true too.
Yeah,
and then the sort of
that's body dysmorphia, which is a hallmark of an eating disorder, is that you cannot see yourself accurately in the mirror.
Yes. And even though I feel like I've recovered in so many huge ways, I still feel like I don't always see myself accurately. So, definitely didn't then.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, the older men, most of your boyfriends were older men, all inappropriate.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
Inappropriate in different ways, but
right.
Yes. Right.
Or crazy. Or, yes. Or just outright crazy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So did you change their names?
I did change their names, and I did change a few identifying features.
But they'll buy the book and know.
You know.
Won't they?
I have been, like, the last boyfriend in the book who I worked with, for some reason, I felt the most nervous about him reading it.
Mm-hmm. Ari? And,
not Ari, Nick.
Mm. Oh, right.
Nick. And I emailed, and Nick is not his real name, but I emailed Book Nick and uh-huh. told him a while ago, you're going to be in my book. Do you want to talk about it? He did not respond.
Ah, okay.
And so who knows? I mean, he's mm-hmm. also like not a big reader.
Oh,
maybe
good.
He won't read it. Ari,
but will his wife?
His ex-wife?
Yes.
Maybe.
Right.
And, right. you know, I thought a lot about this. I really don't want to hurt anyone, mm-hmm. But I'm aware that that is a possibility. Mm-hmm. And I tried to be as honest and kind as mm-hmm. I could be. And there's something that Anne Lamott said that I love, or something, that if like people didn't want to write about, if people didn't want you to write about them being assholes, they shouldn't have been assholes. So maybe there's a little
oh,
truth to that,
that
too.
Oh, that's perfect. I like her a lot.
Me too.
That's great. Now, speaking about the Me Too movement, at one point, and you probably wrote the book before Me Too.
Yes.
Yeah. At one point you say someone tells you hostesses, the point of hostesses is to be fuckable.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and
they are often very attractive.
Yes.
Hostesses. I was like, oh my God, this is in the job description.
Right. And it's just such a destructive, weird thing, and just to be at that time in the thick of my eating disorder and yeah. in this headspace where I felt like that was part of my job, but
right.
I knew that I couldn't really keep it up.
Right.
And
right.
it felt like a lie.
Yeah.
It was very weird. And, you know, I hope it's changing, but I don't think it's changing fast enough. And
right.
it's certainly not changing everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a really weird, messed up, awful part of restaurant culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about the weird steakhouse job?
Absolutely. So, I guess the legal department didn't have me say the name, so
oh,
I won't
okay.
say the name.
Okay.
Unless, well, maybe it's okay, but you probably know what it is. There's about 50 of these restaurants throughout the country,
mm-hmm.
and they have this management program that's very prestigious. They mm-hmm. hire people, Ivy League graduates,
mm-hmm.
and they
which
move
you were
which
at
I
that
was,
point,
and they
with
move
an excellent food resume.
It's really good
yeah.
on your food resume. So even though it was, but then they bring you around to different restaurants around the country. So
mm-hmm.
they moved me to Pasadena,
mm-hmm.
and it was my first like real full time job outside of college,
mm-hmm.
and I learned so much. They have their management trainees do every single position in the restaurant. So
that's an excellent experience.
It really is impressive. It is really impressive. The thoroughness is amazing. Like you do
mm-hmm.
every cook in every station on the line.
Mm-hmm.
You're a host. You do the books with the accountant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you really understand that restaurant inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
So
but
I learned a ton.
But they tortured you.
But it was hell.
Yes.
But it was hell.
You.
It was just really, really
was
the wrong.
Because
fit?
Of the main boss there that it was awful? Or do you think everywhere would have been awful?
I think the main boss who was awful and a bully
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
was the product of a system that was just so not for me.
Right. And that's who lasted there.
Right.
The mean bosses.
Right. It was sort
yeah.
of a military style
yeah. Yeah.
of precision. And I mean, impressive.
Yeah, he was another asshole.
Yeah.
Thank goodness you didn't sleep with them.
Thank goodness. Yeah. Yeah, so it was tough. I mean, I remember on there, they had this like 5-inch thick employee handbook with a million rules. And there was a really strict dress code. You had to wear a dark black suit with a white shirt underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this model with their arms at like 45 degrees, 90 degrees, and how much the shirt should stick out from the suit jacket, half an inch, three quarters of an inch.
Depending on where your arm was.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
And like, you know, not for me. So not for me. So I lasted like a little less than a year. But I'm glad I did it because I learned so much.
Right, yeah. Right. And then afterwards, you're just living in LA for a month, able to enjoy the place because you're not tortured anymore.
Oh my gosh, the relief. Yeah, I mean, I used to wake up in the morning and cry because I was so terrified to go to work, and then just not having to do that. I did worry about leaving, but it was such a good decision.
Ah, so now what did you do next after that?
So I ended up working.
Was that Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia, okay. Yes. And that was another coincidence. My mom met a lady at the bar who sat down in a bar, met someone who happened to own a restaurant.
Now that lady sounded great.
Yeah, she actually, my mom is friends with her and was just texting me about if she's going to come to my wedding. So she's still in my life and she is nice. Great.
You didn't have to change your name then? Or did you?
I did change her name. Okay. Yeah.
But she's like, she comes out as one of the best people in the book.
That's funny that you say so, because she is great, but she's definitely like a quirky, intense person.
Well, so, I liked her.
Okay. I like her too. And it was really cool that she
hired
me. Well,
it was so cool that she hired you from talking to your mother.
Yeah.
And then you actually created her restaurant.
Yeah.
And brought in the fancy chef.
Yes.
And it all worked.
It was very cool.
It didn't work for you, but it worked for them.
Right. I know. And it's such a cool experience to get to run a restaurant. I was 20.
You were 24,
four,
I think.
Yeah,
at
something
the time,
like that.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah. and it was. And I think, looking back, I'm like, I kind of did a better job than I had any business doing. Like, it's kind of a miracle that it worked out so well.
Well, you probably were well trained by the steak people.
I was well trained by the steak people. I was really grateful
for
that.
You were well tortured by the steak people.
Right, but without the steak people torture, I wouldn't have been able to do it. So it all worked out.
I love when you say something to the lady, Margot, the owner. Phony name Margot. Yes. And you say, when was the bar deep cleaned? And she, like, looks at you like, huh?
Right.
What does that word mean?
Yeah. Like, I remember finding, like, her kids' homework, like, old report cards or something, like, in the bar. Like,
And her kids were in college already?
They were a little bit younger than me, but, yeah, I think so.
So, anyway, let's see. What else? So, that was a cool experience, Philadelphia. And then you left.
Yeah. I mean, even though that restaurant was so much more my speed than the steakhouse, I think it really taught me that I was doing some writing on the side, and I was so much better writing about food and restaurants than I was managing one. Mm-hmm. Just the hours are so rough.
Well, it takes its toll.
It really does. And I had an opportunity to work for Fairway, to work for Steve Jenkins. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of a hero of mine. Mm-hmm. And
now what year is this now when you're coming back now, to
let's
New
see,
York?
2012 must
have
been.
Okay.
And so I went for it. And it was great. It was a leap of faith because they said, we like you, but we don't know what to do with you. So I started behind the cheese counter. Mm-hmm. And then 6 weeks later, I ended up being their copywriter and content person, which is pretty much what I do now to pay rent.
Oh, cool. So you got to do writing for them.
Right. And I was writing about cheese and it was very cool because I've always loved food and I've always loved writing, but I didn't know that I could combine them in that way. Mm-hmm. And pay my bills. So that was a very cool discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but it's so amazing that you very quickly, you're still only 24, 25, and you've found your niche so soon.
Yes. Very lucky.
Yeah.
You know, writing about it felt like a long journey, but you're right. I was very young.
Yeah. Yes. Well,
really
it
lucky.
Does. Well, because of all the eating disorder parts, which are, you know, pretty miserable. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk more about that? Why do you think, how did you get to recovery? Was it just an accident that you went to that meeting?
it wasn't an accident. I think, you know, I open the book with the first chapter is my last epic binge.
Yes, yes.
And I think, you know, I had really been looking for the solution for as long as the problem existed in some way or another. I tried a million diets. I tried to meditate. I tried to journal. And then after this terrible binge, I remember like opening up my journal, and a lot of times when I had a terrible binge, it was very clear, like, oh, I had a fight with my boyfriend. I had an awful day at work. But this time there was nothing. And
right. It seemed like you were with your parents and their friends, but it wasn't horrible, but you just went after the food like crazy.
Right. And I felt so out of control and kind of scared at what I was doing to myself because I couldn't stop it. And someone had told me about Overeaters Anonymous, and it sounded like it's even like the name sounded terrible.
Yuck.
The whole thing sounded awful.
Yeah.
But I was desperate, and I went, and my friend was supposed to meet me there at this meeting, and she like forgot what day it was and didn't come.
Oh no.
And so I was horrified. I was there alone. I remember
that might have been better. That might have been better.
I mean,
for you.
Whatever it was, it worked, because that was really responsible. Just like we were talking before about kind of coming out with this stuff, listening to all these people talk so candidly about my deepest secret was like right away, it felt like incredible and like I was in the right place.
Right.
And I went back the next day.
I found my family
Yeah. And I think I had all these conceptions about eating disorders. And one of them was that it was this like after school special problem for like rich blonde girls. I don't know why. I really had that in my head. And so to see all these amazing people, successful people, all kinds of people, men, women, different ages, different stories.
Brunettes,
people of, all different colors of people. Right. And it was just like, oh, okay, like this isn't embarrassing. These are all people who are successful and admirable in the world. Mm-hmm. And they're here. And maybe there's a solution to this thing. And there was.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Now, were you still in therapy with the first therapist then?
No, I stopped seeing her when I moved to LA. So she had been my therapist during college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you contacted her?
You know what? That's a great idea. I probably should.
She might
I should send her a book.
Yes, yeah. Send her the book.
I should send her a book because she was great. And I think she did really try, and I was just so not ready to go there.
Right.
So
yes, I
that's a great idea.
With her a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it must be frustrating. Like, come on.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't she doing something or getting you to talk about it?
Right.
And she tried to occasionally you indicate and you're just like, no.
Yeah. No. She did try. Yeah. And then now that like when I was ready, I was really ready and I kind of jumped into recovery and I started seeing a therapist again. And I don't know
so
what happened between all
out.
Those years.
It balances out.
Yeah.
Both the therapy and the program.
Yeah. They seem to sort of work together. Yeah.
Is it 12 step for?
Yes. 12 step.
And are they different 12 steps? Than Alcoholics Anonymous?
No, they're the same exact 12 steps. And we read the Alcoholics Anonymous big book.
Okay.
Just instead of saying alcohol, you say food.
Uh-huh.
And I think I had read something about this program that turned me off because I had some idea in my head that there was some sort of specific food plan, like diet associated with it.
Okay.
But there's not.
Uh-huh.
And it's really about finding your the foods or the behaviors or whatever it is that triggers each individual person. So I feel like that kind of attention to like, we
personal
all share
detail.
This thing, but we're all a little bit different really worked for me.
But also a big difference is everyone has to eat.
Absolutely.
You can give up alcohol and it's in some ways easier.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
Those cut and dry or like,
right.
If you have a problem with drugs, you don't do any drugs.
Right.
But I think for me, it was really clear to see like the ways that I was eating that were destructive, that even just the structure of having these days, I have three meals a day and then I have optional snacks if I need them. But I don't like eat, I don't sneak food, I don't mm-hmm. eat standing up, like just these little mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. to create some sort of structure.
Some framework
yeah. because there uh-huh. there are things that work and things that don't work right. for everyone. So
right.
figuring
now,
out that is.
Now, do you think it coincidental or suspicious that most of the bad boyfriends were alcoholics?
Yeah, and I think I felt some sort of camaraderie with that, like I related mm-hmm. in some mm-hmm. way, because I do think there is something addictive about right. my eating disorder.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe that made you more forgiving.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And just to think that when you're not in a good place with yourself, it's hard to choose partners who are good for you.
Right.
So
right. Now you're getting married.
Yes.
You have I hope you're marrying a nice boyfriend.
I'm marrying the most amazing person. He's wonderful. His name is Anthony. And I was terrified for him to read the book.
Oh, I can imagine. Is he in food too?
He's not in food. He works for Bloomberg in finance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he actually asked me, what do I have in common with all these guys in the book? And I thought really hard about it because I thought that was a really good question. Mm-hmm. And the answer is nothing. I mean, he's so different in all the best ways.
Oh, he asked what he had in common.
Yes, yes,
I
yes.
thought he meant, what do you have
no,
in common?
No, what does he have in common?
Oh, interesting.
You know, he's like the permanent boyfriend at the end.
Right.
I guess maybe that will be the sequel.
Right, we'll right. yeah. That could be the next book.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for writing this book. I think it will be really helpful to a lot of people in the world.
Thank you so much, Diane. I certainly hope so.
Go out and read Feast
thank
by
you.
Hannah Howard.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.